On one day alone in 1939, some 2,850 reports of suspected German espionage were reported to the FBI. Those fears flamed the highest in February of that year, when over 22,000 Nazi supporters in khaki uniforms, waving swastikas and singing German songs, packed New York's Madison Square Garden for a raucous, hate-filled rally. This story begins on that night. Chapter 1, February 1939.
Eli, just one more, I said to the man behind the bar, sliding my glass across to him. The same. How about we think about calling it a night, Mr. Mossman? The barman replied, likely detecting that rise in my voice that immediately gave me away when I'd had one too many. What is that now? Two? Three? He was being kind. It was four, actually. Four Rob Roys, and he knew just how I liked them. A jigger of cuddy with only a wave of vermouth skirted around the edge. Pretty much scotch on the rocks for anyone else. Along with an ashtray full of Chesterfield butts. That's how I passed every Tuesday and Thursday Eve. But he was right. I ought to get myself home. I had a wife and a daughter there, the remains of a once happy family, even if it was now more of a memory than a fact. For weeks now, after work, if you even called it work, what I did these days, teaching evening classes in U.S. history to immigrants applying for citizenship, I'd been stopping by this dark, smoky bar with its red neon sign flickering on and off. Eli's, Eli's. It was in a part of the city most people steered away from after dark, south of Madison Square Garden and north of 42nd, where the Greyhound Line buses came in. I always instructed the Irish owner who manned the bar as I took a stool, "Just the one, Eli!" Only to make the bus ride across town and the rickety Lexington IRT back to Yorkville more bearable, though I usually threw my wobbly ass into a cab, and to go over the stories of the day, the deteriorating situation in Europe, that madman Hitler threatening to take over the Sudetenland, the wave of America Firsters and our own isolationist Congress seemingly closing their eyes to the looming danger there. What every thinking person in this increasingly blind world could clearly see. But invariably, the one had a way of always turning into two, and two, three, as the discussion heated. "Let those Europeans work it out for themselves," Eli would say. "Me, I don't want a single one of our boys dying over there for them, not after the last war." And then the three might become four, or even more, until it was clear as the torment on my face why I was really there, drinking myself into a dulled state, and that it wasn't all over the gloomy condition in Europe. That clearly, undeniably, I simply didn't want to go home. That home merely reminded me of the promise and hope rapidly fading from my life. That once I had been in the doctoral program at Columbia, instructing graduate candidates in 19th century European history while I finished my dissertation. That once I had a smart and beautiful wife who thought of me as the center of her universe, but now looked at me with scorn and disappointment, if she even looked at me at all. And a daughter, Emma, the apple of my eye, no matter what I had done to ruin things, who had seen me stagger home more sideways than straight far more times than she could even count to at the age of four. "Mommy, what's wrong with Daddy?" she would ask. "Is he sick?" "Yes, honey, Daddy's just not feeling well," Liz would say, doing her best to cover for me. Hearing my daughter's words and seeing her questioning look was the most painful part of it for me. Still, as bad as things had become with Liz, and whenever it was that our troubles had truly begun, tonight, it seemed, the whole city was in the same state of unrest. Maybe the world. Tonight, over 20,000 supporters of that maniac Hitler had gathered at Madison Square Garden to listen to finger-pointing fascists spew their hate and vitriol on the Jews and the international interests who were threatening our society. Thousands, dressed in khaki shirts and armbands, or even in their business suits draped in Nazi flags, listening to anti-Semites like Fritz Kuhn, Father Coughlin, and Joseph McWilliams, known as Joe McNazi, rile them up into a hate-filled state, shouting their vile calumnies against the Jews and Bolsheviks who they claimed had infiltrated our government and were now ruining our country. Bernard Baruch,